and had overhead fluorescent lights. When Chloe lifted the bay door to her unit and turned on the lights, Josie walked in and said, "Wow, look at all this stuff." Chloe followed her. She had forgotten how much this place smelled like the farmhouse, long since gone, of furniture polish and borax detergent. She felt calmer all of a sudden. Why hadn't she come here sooner? When she sold her great-grandparents' land to a developing company, they'd let her keep the things in the house for months after closing. She sold some of the furniture during that time. Then, when she met Jake, the rest went directly into storage. Jake never suggested that she move her things into the apartment, and she knew she was partially to blame for that. She was so excited to be with him, to move in with him and into his life, it never occurred to her to bring any of herself with her. Chloe walked to a long bank of boxes, stacked chest high, a lifetime of books that had come to her. "So, what do you like to read?" She put a hand on one of the marked boxes. "I have mysteries, I have romance, I have history, self-help, classics." "Romance," Josie said. "I have the most of those, ironically," Chloe said, walking over to the boxes on the far end. Josie followed. "I read these just before I met Jake. Tons of them. As soon as I finished one, there was another." "How magical," Josie said. Chloe shifted uncomfortably. "Books aren't always right. But maybe they weren't meant for me. Maybe they were meant for you and Adam." Chloe lifted the lid of one box and said, "Help yourself." Josie paused with her mouth open for a moment, as if Chloe had literally shocked the words right out of her. "Listen, about Adam, would you mind not saying anything about me to him? He seems distracted lately anyway." "Uh-oh," Chloe said. "Uh-oh?" "I sort of already told him."
"Told him what?"
"That you've been interested in him for a while." Chloe laughed at Josie's expression, then reached out and took her hands. "It's a good thing, Josie. Adam isn't seeing anyone. He moved here, so I know he wants to be here, but he's just had some problems adapting. He needs to get out more." "You could ask him out. There's nothing wrong with that. Are you all right?" Instantly, Josie smiled and nodded. "Oh, yes. Yes, I'm fine." "Are you sure?" "Of course. What could be wrong? I have my choice of romance novels. I'm in heaven." Josie began to go through the books, so Chloe walked around, touching things, smiling. There was the headboard of her old childhood bed, the same bed her mother slept in as a child. The pie safe, the jelly cabinet. These things weren't meant to just take up space in order to make a point. They'd been waiting all this time for her to use them. Furniture was a lot more patient than books. Furniture waited for space in your life, instead of just showing up and demanding attention. About a half hour later, Josie had a respectable pile of books on the floor. "I'll get these back to you as soon as possible," she called. Chloe wove her way around ladder-backed chairs and braided rugs rolled up and set on end. "Don't bother. Take all the time you need. They'll make their way back to me eventually," she said as she reached Josie. She found an empty box, and together they loaded the books into it. "What are you doing this weekend?" Josie shrugged. "Taking my mother to tea on Saturday. That's about it." "Do you want to go out? I don't think I could stand another weekend in that apartment alone."
"I don't know. Maybe," Josie said doubtfully. She put the lid on the box and picked it up.
"So what did you decide to take with you?" Chloe turned and looked around the storage bay. "Nothing."
"No?" Josie said, surprised.
"No." Chloe took a deep breath, and the decision was there before she was even fully aware of it. She needed these things. She'd tucked too much of herself away as it was, but she also needed a place to put them. This wasn't exactly the happy ending books had led her to believe. But what did she expect from paper and string and glue? She shouldn't have trusted them in the first place.
I think I need to move out of Jake's apartment.
Late that night, Josie was finally able to get the box of books out of her car and bring it up to her room. She stopped by the kitchen to get the fried egg sandwich from the refrigerator's crisper drawer, where she'd hidden it earlier for Della Lee. She knew now that Della Lee did eat, at night when everyone was asleep. She probably washed then, too. Maybe even did laundry. For days, Helena had been complaining about things moving around the house overnight, and about faucets being left on and the refrigerator door being left slightly ajar, causing the milk carton and jam jars to sweat. As she headed up the stairs, she didn't have to see Helena to know she'd popped her head out of her bedroom. "It's okay, Helena. Go back to sleep," she said, then heard Helena's door click shut in the darkness. She got to her room and went to her closet. "I found out the real reason Adam is acting funny," she said when she opened the door. Della Lee didn't look up from reading one of her notebooks.
"Why?"
"Chloe told him I was in love with him," she said morosely, as she sat down with the box and sandwich bag. This was obviously worthy of her undivided attention, so Della Lee finally looked up.
"How did she know?"
"I told her." Josie still couldn't believe it. Adam was more secret than chocolate, yet she had told Chloe. What was the matter with her? Della Lee rolled her eyes.
"I can't believe you blamed me."
"Well, it never would have happened if it weren't for you."
"You're welcome,"
Della Lee indicated the box.
"What do you have there?"
"Oh, my God, you didn't go to my house again, did you?"
"No, Chloe loaned me some books."
Josie took the sandwich bag off the box and put it in front of Della Lee.
"Here, it's a cold fried egg sandwich."
"No, thanks. I'm not hungry. You have it," Della Lee said, and Josie didn't need to be told twice. After today, pride seemed stupid.
"What kind of books did she loan you?"
"Romance novels," Josie said, as she took the sandwich out of the bag. Della Lee held her arms out on both sides, as if to take up as much space as possible in the closet.
"Don't you dare put them in here."
Josie took a bite of the sandwich and looked at Della Lee curiously.
"But that's where the rest of my books are."
"Don't you get it yet? You find out your mailman knows you love him, and what do? You bring back romance novels to read in your closet."
"Well, obviously, I can't read them in my closet. You're there."
Della Lee made a frustrated sound.
"Adam knows how you feel about him. Why don't you do something about it? Ask him out. Something."
"You sound like Chloe. He doesn't want to be asked out. He found out I was interested in him, and he backed off, way off. He's wondering what he's done to encourage me, how he could have prevented it from happening. I'm not going to make either of us feel more uncomfortable than we already do. Soon this will all blow over, and we'll get back to the way things were."
"When are you ever going to get fed up enough to do something about this life of yours?"
Josie snapped her fingers in an aha moment.
"I know. I'll start with kicking you out."
There was a knock at the door, which made Josie jump. She hurriedly wrapped her sandwich and wiped her mouth.
"Scoot over,"
Josie whispered, trying to push the box into the closet.
"No way. You are not putting that in here."
"Della Lee!"
Another knock.
"Just a minute," Josie called, turning to push the box under her bed, then stuffing the rest of the egg sandwich into the bag. She threw it under the bed, too. She quickly closed the closet door on Della Lee, then stood and said,
"Come in."
The door opened. It was Helena. She was wearing a long robe, and her hair was in paper rollers, covered with the silk scarf Josie had given her for her birthday in the summer. She stood in the doorway and looked around Josie's bedroom leerily.
"Olsie," she said, bringing a small peanut butter jar out of her deep robe pocket. "I bring this."
Josie walked over to Helena in the doorway.
"Peanut butter?"
Helena unscrewed the lid and showed her.
"Dirt."
"Oh," Josie said, nodding, though she had no idea what Helena was talking about.
"Right. Dirt.
Look what I do."
Josie watched as Helena sprinkled dirt in a thin line on the floor at the threshold. Then she handed the jar to Josie. "You do. At that door." She pointed to the closet across the room.
"You want me to sprinkle dirt at my closet door?"
"Yes, dirt from my home. My sister sent." Helena indicated the jar.
"It keep bad thing away. No more downstairs."
"Oh, I see." Helena knew something was going on, and she knew it had something to do with Josie's closet. "Great." Josie went to the closet and sprinkled dirt at the door to make Helena feel better. Every so often, Josie would find that Helena had sewn small crosses into the hems of Josie's dresses for luck, and she always knocked on door casings 3 times before entering a room that had been empty for more than a couple of hours, to chase ghosts away. Helena didn't speak often of where she came from, but she held fast to beliefs that were obviously deeply rooted. She brought the jar back to Helena, who was nodding now.
"There. Old ze sleep. No bad thing."
"Thank you, Helena."
"Old ze a good girl," Helena said, and walked away.
Josie closed the door, then went directly to her bed.
"You live in a crazy house," Della Lee called from the closet.
"You can always leave," Josie said, going to her knees and crawling under the bed to get her sandwich bag.
"And miss all this fun? I don't think so."
Chapter 6 Sour Patch. Saturday afternoon, Margaret changed her shoes 3 times, her purse 2 times, and snapped at Josie for no other reason than because she was standing there waiting patiently to take Margaret to tea. Margaret hated having tea with Livia Lindley White. She second-guessed everything she wore and actually practiced answers to possible questions Livia might ask. Margaret knew she should be past the point of feeling intimidated by this woman. Livia was 91 years old now. No one that old should still have so much power. But she did have power. She was the only person in town, besides Marco, who knew about Margaret's affair. It had happened over 40 years ago, but Livia would not let it go. Every month, like a queen, Livia commanded Margaret to join her for tea, and every month Margaret had no choice but to go. They met in a private, sectioned-off area of the tea room in what used to be Livia's old family home, the oldest home in Bald Slope. 30 years ago, at Marco's encouraging, Livia had donated the house to the Preservation Society, and it was turned into a museum with a tea room. Livia thought Marco could do no wrong. She'd even consulted him on the perfect place to build her new home on the mountain. She lived there now with her nurse, her maid, and a cowed granddaughter. Though it had been 3 decades since she'd actually lived in the historic home, Livia still thought it her right to come and go as she pleased, entertaining and sometimes offending tour groups and walking into the kitchen and criticizing the pastry chef like she was still the mistress. Josie finally drove Margaret to the Lindley White historical home, though Margaret still wasn't happy with her choice of shoes. But it would be even worse if she was late, so she made do. Once there, Josie walked with Margaret into the private room. Margaret always insisted on this. She wanted Livia to see that her daughter was attentive. But also, since her hip replacement, Margaret wasn't very steady on her feet without her cane, and she wanted Josie there to lean on to keep from stumbling. She never walked with her cane around Livia. She didn't want to give her that satisfaction. Livia had never needed a cane. She was as tall and bony and straight as a calcified tree. Livia was already seated in the tiny room. She checked her watch pointedly, though Margaret knew she was on time. When they reached the table, Livia said,
"Josie, wait outside with Amelia."
"Yes, Mrs. Lindley White," Josie said, then left.
"Margaret, what are you waiting for? Sit down."
"Yes, Livia." Margaret pulled out the chair and sat, with considerable effort going into doing it gracefully and not wincing.
"Your daughter looks different,"
Livia said.
her long, knobby fingers toying with the pearls at her neck.
"What's different?"
Margaret put her napkin in her lap. "I don't think anything is different."
"She was never a pretty child, was she?"
"No, Livia."
"We're ready,"
Livia yelled, and Margaret closed her eyes briefly. The curator, always the curator, slid back the partition that separated the small space from the rest of the tea room and rolled in the cart with the tea service. All the other employees refused to do it.
"It's still such a surprise, you being a beauty. It's hard to believe she's your child. In fact, knowing your ways, I would have even doubted she was Marco's child if she didn't have his eyes," Livia continued, as the curator poured the tea into fine china cups. "But my Amelia isn't pretty either. They need to stay that way, to stay at home and take care of us. The uglier the girl, the more helpful she is. That's been my experience. Pretty girls aren't very trustworthy."
"Josie is going to stay at home," Margaret said as the curator set small bowls of sugar cubes and lemon wedges on the table, then a three-tiered server laden with cucumber finger sandwiches, flaky raspberry jam puffs, and thin slices of rum and butter cake. She made haste and left without a word. Lucky woman.
"Hmm, you hope."
Livia stirred two sugars into her tea.
"So tell me about your month. I heard you went to the ladies' club meeting."
"Yes, it was very nice."
"And that you had a manicure and pedicure the day before you went."
Margaret smiled and nodded, annoyed that Livia asked questions she already knew the answers to. She was just testing Margaret. Livia had an endless network of acquaintances who kept tabs on things for her. Margaret was always aware that every public place she went, there was someone who would, inadvertently or not, be Livia's telescope into her life.
"That's my routine." "Raleigh Pelham still takes Annabel Drake to the ladies' club meeting in his cab, doesn't he?"
"I believe he does, yes," Margaret said.
"He might be sweet on her, I heard."
Margaret reached for the sugar tongs.
"Oh?" "Interested, Margaret?"
Livia said slyly. Margaret wondered at the power of her own heart. All these years of doing what she was supposed to, of sacrificing happiness for her place here in Bald Slope, and it still hurt. Her damn old heart still hurt for him. Three sugars later, Margaret managed to say, "No, Livia."
"It was a long time ago. Surely you don't still have feelings for him. I'm disappointed in you. I've tried very hard over the years to give you guidance, direction."
"And I'm very appreciative.
Bald Slope is a different place from your Asheville. We have different rules here, rules that can't be forgotten. I'd always hoped you would take up where I leave off, making sure things are done right here when I die."
Margaret took a sip of tea instead of commenting on the improbability of Livia ever dying.
"Everyone said you knew the rules. Pretty little Margaret from Asheville. She doesn't do anything wrong. Oh, how everyone used to envy you. But I knew you weren't good enough for Marco. It's a shame he's not around to see how much I've helped you."
"A shame," Margaret said tightly. Livia had been in love with Marco. Margaret knew it from the moment she met her, and Livia had watched and watched for some misstep, anything that would dishonor Margaret, make her not worthy of the great Marco Serini. And Livia found it all right. She had to have known about all of Marco's affairs, but that was acceptable in Livia's eyes. Perhaps she'd even hoped that one day he would have an affair with her. But for Margaret to have a little happiness, that would never do. Out in the main tea room, Josie sat with Livia's granddaughter Amelia at a table near the windows. They were served tea, but Amelia just stared out into the side yard, watching the leaves whip around. Amelia was a short, earnest woman who bit her fingernails and wore her blonde hair in a bowl cut. She'd been bred for this. When Amelia was born, Livia took one look at her with her red, splotchy face, her crusty cradle cap, and her calm, almost morose disposition, and said, "This one will take care of me." So Amelia's mother, eager to keep her trust fund, had told Amelia all her life what she was going to do. Right after high school graduation, Amelia had moved in with Livia and had been her personal servant ever since. Josie produced a bag of caramels and chocolates from her purse, knowing from years of these teas that, when allowed a dessert, Amelia always chose the chocolate caramel tort. "Here, Amelia, I brought you this," she said. She always brought Amelia candy, even though it was like trying to make friends with a stuffed doll. Amelia's eyes slid toward the partition separating them from Livia and Margaret. "I really shouldn't." "I know." Amelia took the bag miserably. "You're a bad influence on me. Ma'am Mother always says, 'Don't eat so much. You'll end up like Josie Serini.'" Josie smiled ruefully. "Yes, I'm a warning to all children." "She doesn't like your mother. I don't know why she invites her to tea." "And I don't know why my mother accepts. I guess ours is not to reason why. Do you want to walk around outside?" "No. Ma'am Mother might need me." Amelia opened the bag Josie had given her and pulled out a chocolate. She stared out the window vacantly as she put the chocolate in her mouth. "Did you ever have plans of your own, Amelia?" Josie suddenly asked. Amelia was in her early 40s, and sometimes Josie would look at her and wonder if this was what was going to become of her. It wasn't a cheery thought. "Or do you still? I mean, to do something more, something else." "It's my job to take care of Ma'am Mother. My father passed away last year, so my mother will probably move in with Ma'am Mother soon, and I'll take care of her, too." Josie hesitated before asking, "Have you ever thought of leaving?" "Ma'am Mother doesn't like to travel." "No, I mean just you." Amelia looked aghast. "Alone?" That answered the question. "Have you ever been in love?" Amelia blushed. "No." "Do you like to read?" "Not much." "Ever want to go on vacation, see the ocean?" Amelia pushed the bag across the table, giving it back to Josie. "You're a bad influence on me." "Then I really hope a rough, disreputable woman never shows up in your closet," Josie said. "I don't think you'd be able to handle it." "There's something wrong with you, Josie," Amelia said. "I'm going to go sit over there." After tea, when they all walked outside, the wind hit them with surprising force. It was getting colder. Crickets were taking up residence in fireplaces. Woolly worms had more black on them than brown, and every persimmon sold at the market turned out to have seeds in the shape of a spoon. Everyone knew what that meant. Natives of Bald Slope were hardwired to recognize the signs that snow was coming. Josie hoped it would be a big snow, even though that seemed too much to ask of November. The big snows came in late winter, even early spring in western North Carolina. Livia and Margaret said their goodbyes, their dark coats flapping around them like blackbirds. Livia turned and walked to her car, and Amelia trailed behind her like a stray thought. Josie and Margaret watched them go, similar expressions on their faces. Margaret sighed. "Well, that's over." "Yes," Josie said. "Until next month." "Is it just me, or do you imagine it's always going to be a more pleasant experience than it actually ends up being?" Margaret shook her head. "I stopped believing that a long time ago. Hope is for fools, Josie. Let's go home." While Josie and Margaret were suffering through tea, Chloe was across town going over apartment rental listings in the newspaper. Jake was doing it again this weekend, not contacting her. He was just waiting, waiting for her to come to her senses. Where else would she go, he was probably saying to himself. Not with arrogance, because Jake wasn't arrogant, but he saw some things as simply inevitable. That every Monday night he had to have dinner at his parents' house, that people would always like him, that he and Chloe would always be together. Did he think about that while he was sleeping with the other woman? Was he thinking, "This doesn't matter, this doesn't count. Chloe will always be with me"? She angrily circled another listing in the paper. She didn't have to depend on Jake for her social life, for the roof over her head, for her sense of security. She was going to take steps to forget all about him. Soon she would forget about his voice, how good it felt to have him around, how amazing his body was, the things he could do to her in bed, and she would stop imagining him making the other woman feel the same way. She set her pen down on the newspaper. Julian had been in the back of her mind all week, lingering, not pushing. He said he was at Jiggery's most weekends. She could go there tonight and maybe talk to him some more about their shared misery. He understood what it was like to be hurt by someone you love. It was a step, and that's what her life was all about now, taking steps, random steps, in any direction that took her away from the center of the hurt. She spent a lot of time with her hair and makeup again. She even used her shimmery eyeshadow. She wore her heeled boots and her short wool plaid skirt and her favorite soft cabled sweater. When she looked at herself in the mirror, she liked what she saw. What she looked like couldn't be the reason he slept with someone else, could it? She guessed that depended on what the other woman looked like. When she got to Jiggery's, she spotted Julian right away. He was more handsome than Jake, or rather, more beautiful. Jake was good-looking in a prosperous kind of way. You could tell he came from money. You could tell he'd worn crisp school uniforms with crests on the blazers. You could tell he knew how to play polo and golf and squash, though in fact he didn't anymore. He didn't want his parents' lifestyle. They'd had high hopes for him when he went to law school, but they were sorely disappointed when he went to work at the DA's office. Now even they could see that he was so good at what he did that he was going to go far. Julian's confidence was different, mercurial. He could be whatever you wanted him to be. He was seated at the bar, surrounded by women, women who existed only at night, thin sheets of steel, all sharp edges and shine, undulating and unsteady. He was something different to each of them, and that made them swoon and think the other women were no competition at all, because each thought she had the true Julian. When Julian saw her, he immediately left them to come see her, which felt nice. "Hello there," he said. "I didn't get your name last time." "It's Chloe." "Would you like a drink, Chloe? Let's sit." He led her to the end of the bar, past the shiny, undulating women who would simply wait there for him to come back to them. He and Chloe sat and he ordered their drinks, remembering that she'd been drinking a lemon drop last time. "I see you didn't bring a book with you. How are you?" She nodded. "Fine. Better. I'm glad you came. I've been wanting to talk to you. I even showed up here a couple of nights during the week last week to see if you'd be here. Your boyfriend, would his name happen to be Jake Yardley?" She felt a slight pinch of apprehension. "How did you know that?" "I've been asking around, and I might have some leads." She looked at him, confused. "You said you wanted to find out who the other woman was," he clarified. "The woman he cheated on you with?" Her heart started to race. "You know who it is?" "Not yet, but I'm close. There's only been one soap opera in the DA's office in the last 3 months, and I was told it had to do with a golden boy named Jake Yardley. No one has wanted to give up the details yet."
"I can't believe you'd do something like that for me. You don't even know me."
She put her hand to her chest. His eyes followed the movement to her breasts. He didn't look long, but long enough.
"I know hurt when I see it. I guess my next question is, do you want to know her name? There's no going back once you know."
I want to know, Chloe said without hesitation.
Then I'll find out for you. I have some connections at the courthouse.
Their drinks arrived, and Chloe took a sip of hers, trying not to stare at him outright, but she couldn't help it.
You don't work at the courthouse, do you? I've never seen you there.
No, but I've had plenty of legal matters settled there, enough to become friendly with people who can help me out if I need it.
What can I do for you, then? I'd like to be able to help you.
You can start by taking off your jacket and staying a while.
He got off his stool and stood behind her. He slowly slid her jacket off, touching her neck ever so slightly as he did so. He put her jacket on the bar, then sat beside her again. She felt lightheaded. She blinked a few times, trying to corral her thoughts.
So, have you heard from your girlfriend?
No.
This must be so hard for you. Did she leave you a note? Anything?
No.
He put both his hands around his beer mug and stared down into it.
We've been fighting a lot lately. After our last fight, she got in her car and left. She'd been acting strangely for a while, depressed and prickly, like she knew she was going to leave and she was just waiting for the next big fight for the excuse. But she didn't take her clothes or purse or anything. Then a couple of days after she disappeared, a woman came into the house while I was sleeping and took some of her clothes and her wallet. So I know she's still around. She just doesn't want to come back or see me.
So is it over between the two of you?
Probably. He met her eyes. What about you and Jake?
I don't know.
He smiled slightly.
You still love him.
She looked away. After a few moments, she said,
I can't seem to help it.
You're Jake. Is he tall with blonde curly hair?
She turned back to him curiously.
No.
Then is he medium height with dark hair and light, eerie eyes?
He was beginning to scare her.
I wouldn't say they were eerie, but yes, why? Because a big blonde and a shorter guy with those eyes just walked in and zeroed in on us. And they looked none too pleased.
He smiled like it meant nothing, like it actually amused him. She looked over to the door and locked eyes with Jake. The force of it nearly knocked her over. As much as Julian could do, as much as he wanted to do, he could not affect her the way Jake could. It was the difference between a tickle and a punch. Jake walked toward her, Adam on his heels. They got caught in the group of shiny women on their way. Walking through that group was like walking into a sudden dust devil. They emerged on the other side, looking rumpled and windblown. By the time they reached her, Julian had disappeared. She looked around, confused that he could slip away without her even being aware. He was nowhere to be seen.
Chloe, what are you doing? Jake said.
His eyes were all over her, drinking her in like sweet tea with lemonade. He missed her. She felt it as clearly as she felt her own sense of loss. She got off her stool and grabbed her jacket.
It's none of your business.
You don't know that guy. He's bad news.
Oh, really? She snapped. Let me tell you something, Jake. You lost the right to have any say in my life the moment you slept with another woman.
I didn't sleep with her.
You're splitting hairs? She said incredulously.
When it's this important, you're damn right I'm splitting hairs. I had sex with her. That was all it was. It didn't mean anything. Everyone was tired. Everyone was high on winning. And there were all these emotions looking for release. I didn't make a conscious decision.
Will you listen to what you're saying?
Chloe's voice was rising, and people were starting to stare, but she didn't care.
You're blaming cheating on me on a murder case? There was a decision whether or not to do it, and you made that decision. The case didn't, you did. Who was she?
He paused, and for one brilliant moment she thought he was going to tell her. But then he said,
She was no one.
Get out of my way!
She tried to push him, but he didn't budge. He took her by the arms. Chloe, please,
Just promise me you'll stay away from him.
I never, ever told you to stay away from other women. I trusted you.
I trust you, Jake said. I don't trust him. He has a record.
She sucked in air so quickly she almost choked.
How do you know that? Have you been spying on me? You don't think I can handle myself. You don't think I can do anything without you. You don't even think I can handle knowing who you slept with. I'll show you, Jake.
She barreled past him this time.
I'll show you.
Jake went after her, but she ran to her car in the side lot by the bar and raced out without another word. He watched her car disappear. At least she was heading in the direction of their apartment. He went back in and found Adam at the bar. He'd already ordered beers.
Did you know she was going to be here? Adam asked as Jake took a seat. Is that why you wanted to come?
Someone from work said they'd seen her here earlier in the week talking to that scumbag. I just wanted to tell her what he was. I feel so used.
Jake tried to smile at that. He didn't think it was possible to miss a single living human being this much. When he'd seen her across the bar, his heart had nearly beaten out of his chest. He missed her passionate earthiness, her easy laugh, her warmth. He missed the smell of her skin. He wanted to touch her again. But when she'd seen him, she had looked so profoundly unhappy that his hands had fisted at his sides with frustration. He didn't know how to fix this, and it looked like he'd made things even worse tonight. For the first time, he began to wonder if things were truly going to be all right. He'd just picked up his beer when he looked across the bar to where Chloe had been seated. Her drink, probably a lemon drop because that was her favorite, was still there. And next to it was a book. He knew it was hers. When he first met her, she was never without a book. And she had more books in storage than he had ever seen one person own.
It had always fascinated him that she'd consumed so many words, that her head was full of stories told a thousand different ways. She'd always seemed a little embarrassed by her books, so he'd never pushed the subject. But this book could be the key to seeing her again. He could return it to her and say he was sorry, start some sort of dialogue. To hell with what his father said. He put his beer down and began to walk around the bar, keeping his eye on the book. He got caught again in that group of drunk, touchy-feely women along the way. He heard Adam call to him, "Don't panic, they can smell your fear." Eventually, he managed to untangle himself from them. By the time he reached the other end of the bar, her drink was still there, but the book was gone. Chloe woke up feeling parched and headachy.
"Jake," she said automatically, reaching for the other side of the bed. He always made her feel better when she was ill. But when her hand touched his flat, empty side of the bed, she remembered. He wasn't here. He wasn't here, and she was. In bed, in her clothes. She sat up slowly, squinting through the pain in her head. She moved her legs to the side of the bed and sat on the edge, putting her head in her hands. She'd spent hours crying when she got home, crying in a ball on the floor, crying so hard her chest felt like it was going to cave in. It physically hurt to cry that hard. A hard cry could draw walls in. It could bend metal. It could turn a full moon into a sliver. She began to shiver, so she grabbed her jacket from the bottom of the bed. It smelled like cigarette smoke from the bar. She slowly got up and headed to the kitchen for some water, ignoring old love, new direction, which had perched itself on one of the blades of the slow-moving ceiling fan above the couch. A girl's guide to keeping her guy was sitting primly on the coffee table. Paper, string, and glue. As she walked, she stuffed her hands into the pockets of the jacket. She felt something in the left pocket and pulled it out. She stopped and stared at it. It was a cocktail napkin, and on it was written a phone number and a name. Julian. Chapter 7. Sugar Daddy. Monday afternoon, on her way to the organic grocery store to pick up the peppermint oil that was finally ready for her mother, Josie stopped by the courthouse to see Chloe. The moment she caught sight of her, even from halfway across the rotunda, she knew something was wrong. Chloe was sitting at one of the two cafe tables in front of the counter, a cup of coffee in front of her, staring into space. "Chloe?" She immediately looked up. When she saw who it was, she smiled. "Oh, hi, Josie." She didn't have on any makeup, although there was some leftover glitter dotting her brow bone, and her red hair was pulled up into a tangled ponytail. There was sadness under her skin, giving her a fragile, matte pallor. "What's wrong?" Chloe stood and picked up her cup. "Nothing. I'm fine," she said, as she walked around to the sink and poured out the coffee. Josie went to the counter. "No, you're not." Chloe shrugged, her movements uncomfortable. "I guess I was in shock for a while. Jake telling me he'd slept with another woman, then kicking him out. This weekend I think it finally hit me. Bam!" Josie suddenly felt ashamed of herself for getting so worked up over Della Lee. Chloe had real problems. Josie just had a woman living in her closet. "What can I do?"
"Nothing. I wish there was something you could do, you know, to make this move faster. I just want to hurry and get to the part where it's over and I feel better."
Josie tried to think of something comforting to say, maybe about the slowness of some parts of life, or how quickly things can change, or how, when all else fails, it helps to eat chocolate. But then Chloe shook her head.
"I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put that on you. Would you like a sandwich? Grilled tomato and cheese? Fried egg?"
Chloe seemed to like the distraction that food preparation gave her, so Josie said, "What's your favorite?"
"My favorite?" Chloe said, as if no one had asked her that before. "I guess I like plain turkey on jalapeno cheese bread the best."
"Okay, I'll try that."
"To go?"
"Yes. I have to go to the organic grocery for peppermint oil. I just wanted to stop by to say hello and to thank you for the books again. How goes the house hunting?"
"I've been going over rental listings and making appointments," she said as she assembled the cold sandwich.
She bagged it and handed it over to Josie.
"Peppermint oil? Is that why you always smell like Christmas?"
Josie laughed at that. "My mother insists that peppermint oil be used on the casings of our house. It's supposed to keep unexpected guests from arriving on the doorstep. I'm pretty sure the old herbalist at the organic grocery propagates these superstitions for profit. She claims that she can whip up love potions, elixirs for pleasant dreams, charms that will give you more hours in a day, all made from natural ingredients found in the mountains. Nova Berry. She's quite a character."
"I've never heard of her."
Josie gave her the money for the sandwich, even though Chloe tried to wave it away. "Not many people have. She works with referrals only." As Chloe put the money in the cash register, she said thoughtfully,
"Do you think you could refer me?"
"Well, sure. What do you need?"
"I don't know," Chloe said. "Maybe she can tell me."
Nova Berry looked like a hickory switch, tall, thin, and knobby. She could trace her family line back hundreds of years in the Appalachian Mountains. These days, people treated what she did as a novelty, but there was a time when the Berry women were known far and wide for their natural remedies. Slippery elm for digestive problems, red clover for skin conditions, pot marigold for certain monthly female ailments. Nova had been forced to spice things up a bit now that there were things like Maalox and Midol on the market, so easily acquired. So she made it known that her cure for heartburn also mended a broken heart, and her cure for cramps also made you more fertile, or less, if that's what you wanted. Half the time it really worked, because if it was one thing generations of Berry women knew, it was that confidence was the primary ingredient in every potion. Nova's children ran the market, and Nova had her own workroom in the back. Josie led Chloe there, pushing back the curtain that separated it from the rest of the store. Nova was sitting at her workbench, crushing lavender with a mortar and pestle, listening to Patsy Cline on the CD player her grandchildren had given her. She looked up when they entered.
Josie, I have your mother's peppermint oil right here. Please tell her I'm sorry it took so long. There was a sudden outbreak of constipation that kept me busy.
She got to her feet and gave Josie a small glass vial. Josie discreetly gave her the cash for it. Nova stuffed it in her bra.
Now, can I interest you in a scarf this time?
She gestured to the corner of the room, which was an explosion of yarn, in baskets, on shelves. She knitted 2 or 3 scarves a week, and they were hanging everywhere, even alongside bundles of dried herbs.
Red is your magic color, Josie. Try red.
No, thank you. Josie gestured for Chloe, who was standing by the curtain door, to come forward. She did, but leerily. Josie took her hand and pulled her the rest of the way. Nova, this is Chloe Finley. Nova looked her up and down.
The Finleys who grew corn?
Chloe cleared her throat. Yes, my great-grandparents used to.
I knew your great-great-grandmother when I was a small child. She traded my mother bushels of white corn for a horse chestnut remedy for her varicose veins. Is that what you're here for?
Varicose veins? Chloe said, surprised. No.
Then what?
Nova said. When Chloe hesitated, Nova turned to Josie and said,
Go and try on my scarves in front of that mirror. Red, Josie. Red will get you what you want. Go.
When Josie walked over there, she saw Nova take Chloe by the arm and lead her even farther away. But Josie could still hear when she said,
Now what can Nova do for you?
I want to forgive someone, Chloe said, or I want to move on. Do you have anything that would help? Nova thought about it a moment.
You need a tisane of stinging nettle.
She went to her workbench and opened one of the dozens of clear glass jars.
You use this like tea leaves to drink.
Nova scooped some of the dried plant into a small paper envelope.
Stinging nettle, Chloe said, trying to laugh, but she sounded nervous.
That sounds painful.
Love sometimes hurts. This is painless, though. It tells your heart what to do. Your heart, child, remember. When you have a decision to make, listen to your heart.
Thank you, Chloe said, taking the envelope. How much do I owe you?
Josie's paying for it, Nova said. That's what she gets for eavesdropping.
Josie dropped Chloe off at the courthouse, then went home. As soon as she walked through the door with the peppermint oil, Margaret admonished her for taking too long, then grabbed the oil and went in search of Helena. The oil had to be put on the casings immediately, she said, because Thanksgiving and Christmas were almost upon them, and people didn't think twice about dropping in during the holidays. Margaret wanted to nip that in the bud. Josie went upstairs to get out of her mother's warpath. Margaret hated the holidays. She went to all the holiday social functions because it was expected of her, but there was something about Christmas that always set her off. Josie had learned years ago to try to stay out of her way when she got like this. Josie unbuttoned her coat as she walked into her room. She went straight to her closet, because that's what she always did. It used to be just for the candy. Now it was also to see Della Lee, to talk and to argue. She was actually starting to look forward to it. Which meant that Della Lee had finally succeeded in driving her insane. When she opened the closet door, Della Lee was sitting where she always sat, on the sleeping bag, but she was no longer poring over those old notebooks. She was still wearing all her clothes, but she'd taken off her makeup, and she was holding the small tiara in her lap, looking at it wistfully. Della Lee? She looked up and smiled. She looked younger without makeup, her skin even more translucent, like that of a child.
I won this in the Little Miss Ball Slope pageant when I was 6 years old.
Josie went to her knees, her long coat spread around her on the floor.
You must have been a pretty child.
I was.
She put the tiara on the floor and pushed it toward Josie.
Here, you can have it. Put it on.
Josie shook her head.
My hair wasn't made for wearing a crown. It would get lost.
Please? With a sigh, she put it on her head. Then she spread her arms, inviting snide comments. But Della Lee said,
Very nice. And nice scarf, by the way.
Josie looked down at it, then immediately took it off. Thank God it had been under her coat.
Thank you for reminding me. Nova Berry insisted I buy it, but my mother hates me in red. I bought you some non-perishables while I was at the market, things you can keep up here to eat, but they're still in the car. I'll get them when Mother goes to sleep.
You have to stop moving things downstairs. You're driving Helena crazy. She can't figure out what's going on.
Oh, and I also got you a sandwich at Chloe's, but I ate it on the way home.
Josie, there's something important I have to tell you, Della Lee said seriously. I've been debating whether or not it really has anything to do with me being here, but I think it does, so I think you should know.
Let me guess, you're a serial closet squatter and I'm not your first victim.
No. Della Lee reached into a corner of the closet and brought out the box Josie had taken from her house. She set it in front of her, then she pushed it halfway between her and Josie.
Look inside.
Josie scooted the box the rest of the way toward her and lifted the lid.
See those notebooks? Della Lee said. Those were my mother's. Go ahead, you can look in them.
Josie lifted the first one out. It was a regular spiral notebook, the kind kids carried to school in backpacks. The paper was thin and graying, but the ink was still dark and feathery, like that from a felt-tip pen.
Are these diaries?
More like log books. My mother liked to follow Marco Cerini and write down what he did. She did it for almost 20 years. When I was a child, she would drag me around town in our car, driving wherever he drove. I remember sitting outside homes and office buildings and the ski lodge for hours while he went inside. Mama would talk to herself the whole time, cursing him while scribbling in those books. Sometimes, when he would park his car, she would get out and break his windshield wipers or scratch his doors, and she'd run back to our car and laugh about it. She was obsessed with knowing what he was doing and who he was with.
Josie looked over a few pages, feeling uncomfortable. Most of it was written like this entry, dated March 30th, 23 years ago. Marco drove down Highland Street. Marco parked in the 7th parking space from the corner. Marco used 2 dimes in the parking meter. Marco was wearing his gray suit with a red tie. They stood on the sidewalk and talked. Marco laughed 3 times. She touched his sleeve. License plate numbers of cars in the street: ZXL33, GGP40, DIW07, FNE82, HUN61, CMC75, DFB93.
Josie closed the notebook, shutting out the frantic energy emanating from the pages.
I don't understand. Why would your mother do this?
Marco Cerini had been a very public figure, but as far as Josie knew, he'd never had any real enemies. She was ashamed to admit that she knew very little about her father, just how great